Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Greatest actor to emerge ever from Cavan. He's one of Ireland's greatest. Breen F. O'Byrne is in the studio and he has the BAFTA and the Tonys to prove that. He's in Dublin tonight for the IFTAs and having been nominated for his role in Conclave, which is the epic papal political thriller. Brilliant film, still in Irish cinemas. Edward Berger directed film, you know yourself by now, based on the book by Robert Harris. Nominated as well for 12 BAFTAs and 8 Oscars. Breen F. O'Byrne plays Monsignor Raymond O'Malley. Live in studio, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Oliver.
You're not in Dublin very often, I believe.
No, I am. I'm kind of like the rural independence. I'm up in West Sligo. I'm rarely up here, except I like being here. For some of the rural independents may not.
Yes, it can sort of make them come out in hives.
Yes,
let us know. But you spent most of your career in America, so it must
be
nice to be in Ireland the last couple of years.
Yeah. I lived over there for almost 30 years, so I've been back coming up on 7 years now, yeah.
Loving it?
I do. I love the West Coast. I love Ireland, yeah.
As a Cavan man, was there Sligo was a particular reason why you decided to...
No, you know, my dad's from Southwest Donegal, Kilcar, so and he was a teacher, so every single long weekend or anything, we were up in Donegal looking across at Sligo, so maybe that's where I...
From Mulla.
I'm from Mulla in Cavan. County
that's
Cavan.
The mead end of Cavan now, down...
The mead and not up your end.
No.
Yes, yeah, no. People around me have a rivalry with Meath, not Monaghan.
That's right.
Yeah.
Posh Cavan, basically.
No, it certainly is not.
Kells would be the closest.
I went to school in Kells, I went to school in Kells.
It's mad, we've been talking about Donegal so much this week and now you've given us another Donegal reference.
Well, there you go.
Donegal dad, was he a stoical, quiet man? Is he still around?
Yes, he is still around and he is stoical and he is quiet.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
But you weren't a, it wasn't a big movie household.
No. I don't know I'm considerably older than you, Oliver, but when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, there weren't cinemas around. There were no cinemas around. So I didn't really go to a cinema. We took our one family vacation in 1977 to London. We took over to see an uncle in London and I saw Watership Down and Grease.
Right. In the cinema?
The cinema.
It's your first time in the cinema?
Yeah.
No way.
Well, no, I think once before I was in Thurles with my aunt in Thurles, and I went to a cinema there and I was really struck by the smell of popcorn and I was on a balcony. I'd never seen a balcony and I saw Death on the Nile. So that was it.
You're really not that old.
No. And then I think I came to Dublin probably when I was about 17, 18 and I kind of discovered Screen in the Green and I walked in and saw kind of Betty Blue and Blue Velvet and was like, okay.
Right.
That's
blew your
different.
Mind.
Yeah, it did actually. It did. But I didn't think, obviously, growing up, I don't know whether you felt this, but I didn't see, I understand now people saying if you don't see it, you can't be it. Mm. I didn't know that cultures could be. You know, I didn't see...
It was a different planet you couldn't get
to. No, you weren't ever going to be in.
So you had no burning desire to be on the screen.
Oh my God, or stage or nothing. Yeah, I still don't quite understand. I mean, it's different every time now. I go, why am I doing this profession? Or how did I end up here? It's different as I get older. Something is revealed. Oh, maybe this is why I do it.
So what happens is when you go to America, is it because you go over there and what are you working at? You're in New York.
No, well, what happened was my stock answer was that if you failed enough exams, you end up being an actor, which is my case. And I ended up the second year of existence going to, because I had two buddies going to audition to get into Trinity College for the Samuel Beckett Center for the theater training that happened there. And I thought, gosh, if they go there, what am I going to do? I don't know what I want to do. It was before you were allowed to have dream of being anything in Ireland when we didn't have dreams. It was just like, and they went there and I auditioned and I got in. And that was it. And at the end of it, I went, well, I'm not good enough to be an actor. And then I won a green card that I hadn't applied for. My uncle had applied for and I got to America. I was in America all of a sudden. And then I knew a guy from Cavan. Well, his family, because we were married into them, ran the Irish Repertory Theatre Company in New York.
Series of coincidences and amazing.
Nothing is planned.
A web of serendipities.
Completely.
And there you fall in love with the job.
Well, I don't know if I fell in love with it. It's what I ended up doing. I mean, yeah, I ended up doing it. And it's a fascinating life. I'm not, you know, you end up...
It sounds like there are moments you go, why am I doing this?
And how gosh, continuously. Continuous, like Conclave, like that just, things like that happen. All of a sudden you're in the Vatican and you're going, what, why am I in the Vatican? How am I in the Vatican? Like, this doesn't make any sense. This can't happen, you know, in theatre I've ended up in Guantanamo Bay or like being led through the prisons in Guantanamo Bay going, what am I doing here? How did this happen? And it's nothing except I happen to be an actor. And you get led on these fantastic little stories, and because somebody goes, you could be right for this, and you've no idea why, and you just end up going, this is interesting. And so I think what it's given me is curiosity. And so, like, if you're curious about life, well, there's nothing else really,
you
other than
step into
to be
people's
curious.
Shoes.
Well, you must know that more than anybody.
I do it fleetingly for comedy purposes.
Much more than fleetingly. You're quite remarkable what you
but
do.
But come here, no, thank you so much. Come here, when you were doing Conclave, it must have been quite, because it's shot in Rome.
Shot in Rome.
And everybody's in it, essentially, isn't it?
Well,
it's
like
weirdly
a cast
old,
of
male
like,
cast.
Yeah, a cast of... bald people. It was kind of wonderful to be around my, around my peers.
I didn't think of it like that.
Yeah,
actually.
No, it's just a whole bunch of baldies. Yeah, yeah. It was really nice, and it's a remarkable place. I know it's very interesting. Your complete fascination with the Catholic Church is obvious.
I'm telling you, that is all accidental.
Well,
but when you were putting on the robes of clerical power, and stepping into the incredible recreations they did of the Sistine Chapel,
yeah, remarkable.
I mean, what did that feel like?
It felt good. It felt fine. It felt fine. I mean, it's fascinating. The Catholic Church is fascinating in the context that we're looking at it in the film there.
Yeah.
Because you understand that, and if you're in Rome, because you just understand the power.
That's right.
And the power being an ultimate power in that it passes down. So I never realized that, like, kind of priests take a vow of loyalty, not to God, but to a bishop.
Oh.
And so you know that it all flows down. So
it's a hierarchy.
It's complete hierarchy, and so therefore, whoever is at the top has a profound effect, and and so the political machinations of the place, but it has profound effect on a world, on a global level.
Yeah.
So when you're in Rome, I'm sure you when you see people dressed in clerical gear from all around the world coming for various reasons, whether it's a spiritual journey or whether it's a political journey, you realize you're in a place that with centuries of decision making that has profound effects on everyday lives across the world, and it's an unimaginable power. There's a room called the Room of Tears right next to the in the Sistine Chapel. If you come into, if you're lucky enough to go into Sistine Chapel, you enter into, if you're looking at the resurrection, I don't know what it's called, the main, behind the altar. And
it's Judgment Day.
Judgment Day. And you come in the one door. On the other door, if you're looking at that, on the left-hand side, there's a small room in there that they call the Room of Tears, where when a pope is elected, they go in there and their vestments are waiting, the different sizes of vestments. And it was called the Room of Tears because a pope would go in there, I think in the 1500s, whoever went in first of all, sat down there and cried because the enormity of what has been bestowed upon this individual usually hits. Mm. So we got to go in there and it was bizarrely functional. There was like a fold-up table with a tatty binder with like bad plastic on it, with bad pictures of how stuff should be laid out. And it was after Christmas. There was a plastic nativity scene. And then right beside it was like just this incongruous, bizarre Christmas tree, plastic Christmas tree about 2 feet high, wrapped in tinsel with a Santa Claus on top. And I was like going, the people who worked there, you know, must go, will we put up the Christmas? Where is the Christmas tree? Put up, lighten this place up. 6 feet behind the Last Judgment where people are in there. And so what I'm saying that is that there is a working element to all of this that's kind of mundane.
That's what the film captures so well.
Steeped in history.
Dull bureaucracy as well.
It completely is the bureaucrats.
You have a great role because of you're not in the conclave with the cardinals. Yeah. You're outside finding out what's going on and you have to deliver all these revelations.
Yeah.
And twists that keep occurring.
It's fun, yeah.
You're good at rushing in with that worried look.
Yeah. That's it.
One of your trademarks.
Yeah.
I was also looking up that it's been 20 years since Million Dollar Baby was released.
Yeah.
With Conclave running into Oscar season this time 20 years ago. The movie you were in alongside Clint Eastwood was heading for a couple of Oscars as well.
I mean, it won Best Film.
Yeah, Best Picture.
Yeah, it's really interesting that. I mean, it's kind of...
It must blow your mind to be at the highest level again 20 years later.
Yeah, it's... Well, no, that doesn't bother me. That's nothing to do with me. But what's funny is that I was a priest in that movie that won Best Film, and then this is up for Best Film, Archbishop. And then I did a play called Doubt... Originally, a play called Doubt that won the Tony Award. I was a priest, Tony Award, and Pulitzer Prize. So there's the Christian Brothers didn't give me a direct path into the Catholic Church, I guess, but I'm able to.
It served you somehow.
Yeah.
What is it about you that they keep casting you as a priest?
I don't know what it is. Yeah, I don't know.
Whereas the BAFTA that you won was for a world away from all of that.
Yeah, that was based on a true story, an incredibly sad story, where a young boy called Rhys Jones was murdered by another teenager. And it was the story of bringing the people who murdered him, who were teenagers themselves, to justice. Yeah, it was very poignant.
It's a Liverpool, you're a Liverpool character.
Yeah.
And it was really hard... A story, and Stephen Graham, and was a remarkable thing to be involved in.
Yeah, Sinead Keenan, Irish actress, extraordinary performance by her as the mom. Yeah, very moving. But that's one of those things as well where you go, oh, you know, this is on offer here now. And then all of a sudden you're sitting meeting the parents who've been through every parent's nightmare and you're sitting in the room with them. And then we go to, because I was looking at Goodison Park at the last derby there at the weekend. The fans, the Everton Football Club were very supportive because Everton Football Club was a big part of the story and this child's life. And they gave us permission to go in and shoot at halftime. We had like 3 minutes and asked the fans to stay around. And the entire stadium stayed and we reenacted at halftime. Oddly enough, except directly behind us, which was the posh section, and every single seat behind was empty.
Really?
And the rest of the stadium was completely
there. They stayed, but they knew what it was for.
They knew what it was for, and they just asked, hey, this is an Everton fan. Well, they knew Reese's story, obviously. But it was an interesting thing. But that's another one of those things. You go,
but it's a brilliant scene because you think there's going to be CGI, is going to recreate the crowd or trick it with close-ups of extras. But there's nothing quite like the real thing. It's an amazing scene.
Yeah, it is an amazing scene. Yeah, Sinead is incredible in it. And yeah, you just get to walk out into those positions. And they're all these things are little pinch-me moments where you go, again, wow, I get to live these different lives.
That was Little Boy Blue, was the name of the
Little
series.
Little Boy Blue, yeah.
Where do you keep your BAFTA?
I had to think. It's upstairs in a loft.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a security thing sometimes.
No, it's not at all. No.
So I wonder if you take it down, polish, have a look at it.
No, not at all.
Nice to have.
Oh my gosh, yeah. It's a very weighty object.
And very few Irish people have BAFTAs.
Really? I don't know.
Yeah.
Very few Gavin people have them. Or Monaghan. I don't know if there's Monaghan.
Not sure. Did the Butcher Boy give us any? Although he was a Gavin actor in the starring role.
Well, of course.
Do you pick your roles? Because there are two things you've described which are very close to real life. One option, fictional account of reality.
No, I wish I could say that, you know, I sit down and I mull over things and I go, what's available? It's like, oh, I have a job. Someone wants me for something. Yes, I'll do it.
Simple as that.
Mostly. I mean, mostly. Yeah.
It'd be nice to put an if to now, too. Wouldn't that's happening tonight?
I mean, obviously, I should win, and I've been campaigning very, very, very hardly. Don't ask me who I'm up against, but I'm going to. If I don't win, we'll take over the convention centre tomorrow. I'm going to use the Trump. playbook.
No. Rename it. Yeah. If you showed up dressed as a Monsignor.
Oh my gosh.
Increased the chance. Yeah. Going back to Million Dollar Baby, it must have been quite something to work with Clint Eastwood, because he's starring in it, he was directing in it.
Yeah, well, that was actually when you just said there, what was it like to put on the vestments and stuff like that? That was slightly different because I was doing a play on Broadway at the same time, and I kind of shot it on days off, and I hadn't met Clint at all until I was completely in costume and we were about to shoot. And so I was in costume, feeling remarkably uncomfortable, sure that he obviously had mistaken me for somebody else, and was, you know, when he would see me, he'd go, oh, not
the wrong guy.
Not that Brian O'Byrne, you're the wrong person. So I was like dressed in the vestments and everything, standing around going, oh gosh, when is Clint going to come up? And when is? And then all of a sudden he's there, and I'm going, oh, someone introduce me. I feel completely awkward in all these investments, and yeah. I haven't spoken to him. I haven't met him, and we're going to just shoot this scene.
We thought there was like do months of rehearsals in a room
somewhere.
No, nothing
at all. Didn't meet him, and then I just met him, and he goes, "How are you?" And I said, "Fine." And he said, "You know, I've got a bad reputation of only doing one take, but we'll do as many as you want, and all of this." And I go, "Okay," and. You know, he said, you know, you go, we'll shoot you first. It's a very quiet set, Clint Eastwood sets, because everyone knows him. He doesn't have radios. So it's incredibly, remarkably quiet. He doesn't say action or anything like that. It's just like, really? Okay, we get ready to go. And whenever we want, we'll start. So we shoot it. And I was so nervous shooting these first things. And then he said, okay, now we'll turn around on me, which is, for people perhaps listening, that usually this star takes the first shots because they're, you know, they're at their best and most spontaneous and everything. They're shot first, and then idiots like me come afterwards. But
we see the back of your head.
Yes, and then but then we turn around, and we turn around meaning the camera's on him, and we're shooting it, and I'm walking along, and then I get this look, and I was walking going, oh, that's the Clint Eastwood look. He's just shot me one of those stares, and it was like I was half terrified that was he going to kill me, but he didn't, and it was a lovely experience. But I hadn't met him up to that point.
I was looking up, and he actually has spoken about this in interviews. He says, we had this guy, Brino, who's playing the priest. We didn't do any rehearsals or anything. We did an incredibly emotional scene. I said, you nailed it on the first take. And
actually, he did this one thing, which is, so you pick up these little things from different directors you work with. So we shot a scene where they weren't expecting him to be really emotional. It was a scene in a church, and he started to cry. And so I'm sitting there, and Clint Eastwood is crying beside me. And I go, I wasn't expecting this at all. And either were the crew and all this. So I was like, oh, okay. So he had asked to go first on that time. He finished it. There was some of his friends who were crying, like who'd been with him forever, years, crying because they hadn't seen Clint cry.
Yeah.
And then he says, he kind of dries his tears and he goes, okay, let's go for the money shot, meaning me, which was incredibly generous of him to even say it. But so I did it rather badly, and I'm sitting there going, what do I say? What will I do? And I tentatively went, how was that? Was that okay? And he paused and he just went, I thought it was real.
Oh my God.
And I went, oh, that's right. That's what we're trying to do. Yeah, that's it. So you just go, did that feel real? Yeah. And then you go, okay.
It's coming from him. That's extraordinary.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah.
Totally nailed it.
Well, I don't know. But yeah, but anyway, he was generous.
That's 20 years ago. He is 95 in May. Still working.
Yeah, he just did a movie that wasn't, I didn't see it actually, his latest movie.
Juror number two. It got quite a lot of good reviews.
It got very good reviews, but not released for some bizarre reason. I don't know what
something
it is.
Something to do with political issues. Is it? They reckon. Okay. I was reading about that, but you never know. You never know what's true or not. You look very busy because I see 53 productions on your IMDb. That's the Bible database for all the stuff you've done. And three major ones upcoming.
Do I?
That you're
tell me.
The Abandons with Gillian Anderson. Is that made, shot and done?
We shot the first series in Canada. We spent 6 months over and back to Calgary.
Oh, yeah. Lovely.
Yeah, extraordinary, like set in 1850s in Oregon. And I thought, oh, I'd finally be a cowboy. I've always dreamt of being a cowboy. Yeah. Obviously, being so close to Monaghan and the cowboys that were up there, I thought that, you know, I'd love to be a Monaghan man, essentially, is what I was saying.
Sure.
And got up there, and there's all these people. We had a whole camp of cowboys, and they all had horses. And you know, I didn't ride horses. Like, finally, I get to ride horses. And I was playing, appropriately, Oliver, you'd like this, a pig farmer. But anyway,
and we're then, poultry in Monaghan.
Yeah,
but go on anyway.
I know, it's we're more pigs, we're pig completely. And I go, great. And there's all these young fellas that have been up there doing cowboy camp, and a couple, Tim Murphy, a guy from Kerry there as well. But and they all look fabulous, and they've all got their picked out their horses and everything. And it's written in my script just the first time, like, he's in a cart. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. So I get a cart and a horse, and I'm bumping along in this, you know, there's no suspensions in carts, looking horrendous when all these beautiful people around me are on horses. And I went, there we go.
They'd spotted the mother man of my love.
Yeah,
stick him on
a
cart.
That's it. This one is not going to be up to horses.
That's on Netflix, The Abandons.
I think so, yeah.
Out. There's other things as well. But look, I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, I don't know what we were talking
good
about.
Good luck. Yes. No, that wasn't quite the
plan.
Well,
we have to find out about your whole fascination with the Vatican. Maybe you'll have me back to interview you about
it. I deny it. Well, yeah, we'll do that.
I'd love to.
Breen F. O'Byrne, it's been a pleasure. Good luck in the IFTAs. We'll use this show on Monday to rail if you don't win.
Well, I mean, we'll gather. Surely we'll gather, Oliver. Against the Ulster counties discriminated against in the IFTAs.
That would be the complaint anyway.
Yes, definitely.
But now that you're in Connacht as well, even you just constantly go to a disadvantage.
Well, it's just I'm not happy over here in the Pale. I can
enjoy it. I hope they feed you.
They better.
Breen F. O'Byrne, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.